This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 34, the High Risk Edition. Tension in the air in this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Garaz is on his phone, in a car. Can he make it to the end of the show without any problems? There's only one way to find out, and that's listen all the way to the end. We also talk about batting setup and how to bowl a googly. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and it's the late night Jeopardy edition this week. It's your guide, of course, as always, to coaching and playing better cricket. But we've got some incredible Jeopardy this week. Not only are we recording it, the show, a lot later in the evening than we always do. I've already got my pyjamas on. But also, we have Mark Garraway on the line, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, in the car with a very small amount of battery left on his phone. So anything could happen. We're going to see if we can get through it. Hello, Garaz.
Hello, I would like to say that I am on Bluetooth as well. It's not. I'm not doing anything illegal. But it's a first for us.
It is. It's going to be quite interesting. I mean, we try and make this setup as professional as possible. We've got all kinds of high-tech gadgetry making things work. Sometimes technology can defeat us, so fingers crossed. And also joining me from an unusual location, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm very well. Yes, you've also been banished to a different placing as we're recording this later than we normally do.
I have. I'm afraid. Yeah, I've been kicked out of the usual spot, and I'm hopefully still got good enough reception to manage through.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We'll see what we can do between the three of us. Let's talk a little bit about England, or more generally, I should say stats. But it was an article that was about England and the way that England use or misuse stats that came up this week, and I thought it was worth talking about, particularly from the point of view of how cricketers at all levels can use stats or misuse stats. But let's start with England, and particularly about this article which claimed that England were trying to use Moneyball principles, which of course is the book that started off this statistical analysis of sport, but they're using those principles incorrectly, and it's causing England to fail spectacularly in one day cricket. And they certainly are failing spectacularly in one day cricket. So do you think there's any justification to this argument, Lavers?
Well, as always, it's probably going to be one of a number of things which isn't working to its maximum capacity and isn't as efficient as it could be. I think there's been a bit of conversation around the topic in the last few days that almost assumes that their England team are relying solely on this, on these stats that they're actually using to decide what score they're going to post. But if they are doing it that way, that's probably not the best way to go about it, because I think there's always room to use personal experience and ingenuity. And one of the things that I feel quite strongly about is that the stats reflect on what's happened previously, whereas someone's experience can look at the conditions and look at what's going on around them, and that can predict what's going to happen in the future a little bit more accurately. So combining a quality use of stats and an understanding of how to use them and how to apply them is a very useful tool. But never forget that people have brains out there and they can make decisions on the spur of the moment, which can be very, very clever and can actually alter this path of a game or alter the way we're going to target a score or alter the way we're going to bowl a ball.
Yeah, I mean, stats really are extended brains, aren't they? They're not replacement brains. You know, you can look at a statistical piece of information, but you still need to apply your own mind and interpretation to that information and decide whether it is relevant in the current situation as it was when that statistic was gathered. And it isn't always the case that that's going to be true. So you do have to use your brain a little bit, don't you? And don't just blindly accept the information that's presented to you, but information can be presented to you that you perhaps wouldn't have noticed in your own perception of things, because it's very easy to have biases towards certain things without realizing it. All humans are inherently biased. You know, you, for example, you're more biased towards what happens at the end of a game, the result of a game, for example, to when you're not, to earlier on in a game. If you win a match, you're more biased towards using those tactics again, even if it was down to sheer luck that you happened to win that match. Whereas the statistics take out that bias or reduce that bias. I mean, obviously, a human is collecting and analysing the stats. But, I mean, that's an important aspect, isn't it? That stats are not completely cold and irrational.
Absolutely. There's always going to be a really good use for them, and there's always going to be times when they're actually not going to be of benefit. And that's where still the most important element of a statistic is the person that's interpreting them, and stats only as strong as that person is. So the key to it is having the right people around and the right people managing those stats and collecting those stats and analysing those stats to come up with what could be an effective game plan. So interpretation is key. I think often you can look at a statistic and it can say that someone's particularly weak in a specific area as a batter, but ultimately the stat doesn't account for the fact that he's working as hard as he possibly can to make his biggest weakness his biggest strength.
A strength is often a weakness as well, isn't it? I mean, I'm thinking of saying David Gower, who was extremely good at playing the ball behind square on the offside, and he'd get a lot of runs in that area, but he'd also send a few to gully as well.
Well, I think any use of stats is all about the interpretation of it. And there are so many stats around, not just in cricket, but also in other sports and in business and what have you. And really, it's about extracting the most important ones and keeping things as simple as possible off the back of it. So a lot of stats are there to confirm that our thinking is spot on. And occasionally stats come out which actually tell us that maybe we need to look at things in a different way. But you can get very sidetracked by statistics unless you have a good set of people around you who can interpret and sieve out the good ones from the bad ones and then make it really simple for the players to be able to follow. And generally the ones that England have used over the years and have done really well ultimately have been the most simple. So an example of that was the statistical analysis that sat behind the technical development that they did ahead of going to India and beating India in India for the first time. So that was a good example of it. But equally, you know, I'm not saying England, but a lot of cricket teams get caught up in some pointless stats that actually only confuse rather than clarify.
So where does that leave us when it comes to statistics at a lower level? Of course, resources are a big aspect of that, and you know it's not easy for everybody. But a coach can still use stats even at the most basic level, can't they, Gareth?
They can do it. I think a number of these scoring apps that are readily available on iPads, phones, and all of this sort of thing are brilliant because they actually produce these statistics for you. And very simply, you can extract data on players. And I think one of the most underused elements of statistics for player development is tracking somebody's performance over time. So if you've got a young lad who's not doing particularly well at rotating the strike, then you monitor his scoring ball percentage, do some work with them in the week, in the interim period, around how to manoeuvre the ball or where to pick up singles, and then monitor the adherence to that into matches, and all of a sudden you've got a statistical representation of how they've developed as a result of you doing some work with them as in the nets. And that's really good stuff, which is readily available through any of these scoring apps. And it's simple, it's quick, it doesn't require an office back at your ground with 20 analysts in doing the work for you. It's fantastically easy, and I've seen players benefit because their awareness of their own game and how it's developing has moved on significantly.
Yeah, it's about focus, and it's about the combining of human and statistical, and making something that can improve run scoring and wicket taking, and that's what really matters. Okay, let's wrap this up with a yes-no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And so I'll be looking after the questions. And the first one this week is form transcends formats.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Turning singles into twos and threes is better than power hitting.
No.
No.
Third question. 10 dots and the batsman gets jumpy.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, let's open the mailbag. And of course, what we do in this part of the show is read out a couple of questions, do our best to answer those questions, help the people who have written in, but also decide on a prize winner. And that prize is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And so the first person up for that potential prize is Sarvesh. And Sarvesh is having all kinds of problems, so much so that he's working on his batting setup and he wants guidance through getting the right grip, the right stance and the right footwork. Now, I guess the reason that I chose this question from Sarvesh is that it's a very common question that we get. What's right? What's the right thing to do? But we don't often have a lot of context to help people out. And more we're finding that there isn't really a one single right way of doing anything. So how do you help somebody who is looking for the right way to do something?
Well, as you said, ultimately everyone's going to be slightly different. So people are built different ways. People get into different positions and are different shapes and have the ability to move at different speeds in different directions. So everyone is going to be different. So you're absolutely right. There's not going to be a blanket answer for everyone across the board. So helping someone in this situation can be quite tricky, but there are probably a few questions we can ask of Sarvesh, which he might be able to answer. And then once he's done that, he might be able to just improve the position he's getting into or he's starting in the first place. So first of all, is he balanced? And we won't have to go further into detail as to what we mean by balance, but is he able to hold his body position? Is he feel he's in a position where he can move quickly in different directions? Or is he in a position where he's already leaning in a specific direction and he's only able to move in that direction quickly? So does he feel like he's balanced? Does he feel like he has a stable base which he's generating, which is allowing him to get that movement in? And it sounds like potentially might not be, because one of the things he's mentioned is his footwork there. So maybe that's not absolutely right. Another thing I'd look at is his head still in the at the point of release? Again, something that's pretty important for me. Now you might find that sometimes someone's head is actually moving, but it's moving slowly towards the direction of the ball, direction where the ball's coming from, which isn't going to be as much of an issue. But any lateral movement or vertical movement to a degree while the ball's been let go can interfere with interpretation of where the ball's going to go. So there's a couple of questions there to start with. Secondly, also from his starting position, does he feel like he can freely swing the bat, hopefully presenting that full face towards the ball, or does he feel like he's being hindered in any way that's going to stop him doing that? And obviously any hindrance or everything that's stopping him produce a natural swing of the bat, again, is going to impact on him. Now, a number of people will say that there are certain things which are given. So I think if we go back to the old shoulder width apart and knees bent, etc., and people see these are automatics, and they're general principles you can work around, but some people like to be slightly wider than shoulder width, some people slightly narrower, some people like to sit in the middle or the heels of their feet, so, who are generally wider with their stance, and some people like to be a little bit more on their toes and a little bit more bent in the knees. So Gara's is a lot more knowledgeable about the research that's gone over the last few years into body typing and putting people into different setup positions, but there are different formulas for different people who are built in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that a lot, Gareth, haven't we? And what I've heard from what you've been saying is there are ways that you can look into these things and you can find out more about what would suit a body type and all that kind of thing. But what it really boils down to is somebody tries it in a certain way, and if it feels right, then they keep doing it, and if it doesn't feel right, then they try another way of doing it.
Yeah, but that is exactly it, because I could work with you, David, and I could do some tests on you, which would give us a really good indicator of the ways that we could shift things, or it might be confirmation that the things that you're doing are actually quite good. And that's a very physical testing process. Obviously, there aren't many people around that are qualified or competent enough to do that. So the thing that I encourage people to do, away from myself or through this show, is to experiment. And generally, there's, in terms of stances, there are two types of stances, and there's two camps, really. One is a narrower stance with less flexion of the legs, and the other one is a wider stance with more flexion at the knees in particular. So a contrast between two matters that I could give you would be somebody like A.B. de Villiers, who stands with his feet relatively close together, so within the shoulder width, has a very upright stance with less flexion in his legs. Compare that with somebody like a Peterson or a Graham Smith, who has significant flexion, and what that does is it pulls their weight into more of their heels of their feet rather than forefront of their feet, and that's how they move. They move through pushing off of their heels. They move from translating their weight rather than using their head as the thing that creates an imbalance, and then they step forward. So the head goes forward and then they step. People with taller stances tend to lean with their head. People with the squatter stances with their feet wider apart tend to push off from their feet when they move. And I think that's a very big change from the way that we grew up being coached a number of years ago, where everybody moved as a result of their head going first. So I think you only have to watch a game of cricket to realise that. So there's your first thing. Either have a go having your feet a bit further apart with some leg flexion, or having your feet together a little bit more, inside the shoulder width, and leading with the head. And one of those, you'll find that you have much more ability to adapt to length, to line, to swing, to be able to move out of your stance, which Sam talked about earlier. And that would be my starting point for everybody, to get that bit, which is their preference. And then all of a sudden, we can start working on some of the other aspects of the game, like a grip. I completely agree with what Sam said about a grip, and you'll know as a batter if your bat face is coming across the ball one way or another, and ultimately all we're looking to do is square up the bat face of the ball as much as we possibly can for as long as we can. And you can tinker around with your grip to be able to do that. So I'm completely agreeing with Sam on that, and I'd encourage people that are struggling or people who aren't sure what their preference is for standing to have a go at either bending their legs with a wider set of feet, or narrowing them up a bit and standing more upright. It's a really good experiment to have a go at, because you'll find that one way works much better for you than the other.
One thing that certainly younger players don't think about so much is the bat itself as well. I know that there's a number of young players that I coach who have bats that are way too big and heavy for them. And because they're still learning the game, they're still learning how to bat, they're still learning how to play straight, they're still learning how to stand and how to even hold the bat. That's starting to influence the way that they hold the bat, because they're having to heft, you know, a not particularly large 12-year-old having to heft a great big short-handled bat, which is too heavy for them and too big for them. It's just a nightmare for them, and that's affecting their setup.
Well, it does, and it also affects their mechanics as well, because obviously if you're picking a weight up, it doesn't matter what that weight is. If it's too heavy for you to be able to cope with and to be able to go through your range of movement, your body will adapt, and will adapt in a way that might not be in the way that you move or the way that your technique works. So it's really important to have a bat that allows your body to unwind and strike a ball in the way that you want it to. You don't want to have to compromise. And I think we're in a great age for bats. And we talk about it a lot, don't we, that the technology behind bats has helped in terms of the ball travelling very big distances and going off the bat at a razor notch, but it's also helped the young player because the wood isn't pressed so much nowadays, not as squeezed as much as it used to. We tend to get bigger bats and lighter weights. So it's all about, for me, getting the right weight. And you can get a bat with loads of wood on it nowadays for incredibly light weights. And that enables our youngsters to be able to still have the feeling that they can hit a ball and keep their body shape because they're not having to over-muscle the bat because it's too heavy. So always go lighter. But nowadays, you can get big bats as well, which is fantastic because they don't press the wood like they used to when I grew up.
There you go, Sarvish. We can't give you the exact answer that you need because we don't know enough about you, but you've got some areas to work on there. Next question is from Ryan. And Ryan is a leg spinner who, as I've mentioned before, is far and away the type of cricketer that we get more questions from more often than any other. And I always feel guilty that we get so many leg spin questions and I hardly ever put one in there, especially as I love leg spin so much. So Ryan says, hi guys, I've got a good leg break with lots of side spin and a pretty decent top spinner, but I find it really hard to bowl the googly. Can anyone give me some suggestions?
One of the oldest tricks in the book, and one of the first things I ever learned as a young coach, was to have to help somebody bowl a googly. So I'm going to give you the oldest trick in the book here.
Great.
So when you get into your delivery stride, we normally ask you to push your front arm out towards the batter's face, use that rudder to start the mechanics over. What you're going to do is you're going to drop your front shoulder and you're going to pull it down and try and get that front shoulder. So me as a right arm leg spinner, a bad one, but if I'm trying to simulate it, I'd be trying to pull that shoulder and get it as close to the ground as possible. What that enables me to do is to have a very, very vertical bowling arm. Because normally leg spinners bowl with a bowling arm that's around 11 o'clock rather than up at 12 o'clock. And that enables them to get their wrist around the ball and to get the ball to go from leg stump to off stump. Whereas if you dip that front shoulder, your arm slot will become more 12 o'clock, and all of a sudden your wrist mechanics will be the other side of the perpendicular, and then the ball can come out. So that's the first way that I ever learned to teach people to bowl googlies. And it takes practice, and it's not going to happen straight away. It's going to feel very weird to start off with, but by changing that arm slot and getting it the other side of perpendicular, or even totally upright, will enable the wrist to work in a different fashion.
It is a skill that takes a while to develop, and it's also a skill that you can slightly overdevelop because it's very easy to forget how to bowl a leg break while you're practicing the googly, isn't it, Lavers?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember I was lucky enough to work with Terry Jenner on a number of occasions, and he was obviously seen as one of the masters of leg spin and works closely with Shane Warne over a number of years. But one thing he did was exactly what Gareth has suggested there, is he always used to, whoever he was coaching with, he'd say whenever he was looking to practice a new skill. So if he was looking to practice a leggy or a slider or a topspin or a googly, he would always say, how long is it going to take me to bowl 100? How long is it going to take me to bowl 100 googlies? And the player might say, 100 googlies, probably bowl two. If I get a load of balls, I'm going to bowl two or three a minute maybe if I take my time. And they might say 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And Terry would just start throwing it hand to hand. It's called the hand to hand drill in Terry's language. It always was. And that would be a case of one every 3 seconds. And he would just be developing that muscle memory and developing that repetition that he wants and that's needed for leg spin and for bowling and for cricket in general. But as you said, there's always an over reliance or you can overcompensate and do something too much. I think one of the other rules that he talks about sometimes was generally going about 3-1. So whatever your most important delivery was, you always started every session with your most important delivery, your stop ball, and you always finished with your stop ball. So you always start and finish with your best ball is something that he really preached quite a lot. And then in the middle of your session, that's when you can go and try other things. But trying to go no more than 3-1 or in a ratio of your best ball to your variation or your new skill you're looking to develop is generally a rule that he stuck to as well.
Peter Philpott as well talks about going around the clock face as well, doesn't he? That's another way of trying to describe it, something the wrist position, the more the wrist position goes round, that the closer you get towards a googly, and the more you're away from a leg break, and then the same in the opposite direction, you get, you know, leg breaker, top spinner, and all the rest of it. So it's worth trying to pick up a copy of Peter Philpott's book, which is called The Art of Wrist Spin Bowling. You've got lots of lovely diagrams and descriptions in there for things that you can do. So that's worth having a look at as well.
And one of the tools is also really useful is just a simple red and white baller, a half and half ball, which gives a much better of an illustration of what the ball's doing in the air. So if you can have a ball that's red and white, or red and yellow, you can get different colour ones these days, but just something like gives a much better illustration to you as the bowler, and a little bit more feedback as to what the ball's doing in the air. So when you are experimenting, you are trying different things, and you are putting new wrist positions, or you are changing your body position, or your arm release position, or whatever it might be, the feedback you get from the ball is actually just amplified a little bit, and you get a slightly better understanding of what the ball's doing in the air.
Yeah, oh, another thing, Sam, along the same lines as that, is to get a normal cricket ball, but get some of that thick tape, which is quite rough on the outside of it, and stick it over the seam.
Obviously
it's easy to see the seam going through the air, isn't it, sometimes? So make that a white colour or a bright colour, and then you'll see that go through the air and give you that feedback. Going on from the Philpott thing that you talked about, David, those hand drills and changing the clock face description that he uses in there are brilliant, because when you find out that the conventional googly might give you a different response to one that's got a slightly different shape to it in your hand. So it might have a bit more topspin and a little bit of googly on it. And all of a sudden you start to devise your own deliveries rather than just having a leg spinner and a googly. And that's how the best get really good. And somebody like Mushtaq Ahmed ended up having about three different types of googly because he did exactly that Philpott exercise. He started to find that he got different responses from putting his wrist in these different types of positions.
That's a really good point, isn't it? You shouldn't just assume that everything's already been invented and everything's been made up. Be creative and try new things, and it might be that you come up with something that no one's ever done before, and something that changes the way cricket is perceived and the way it's played in modern days.
And I've got to say that there's no more cricket obsessive than the leg spinner in the game. They are absolutely bonkers. If anyone's going to experiment, it's the leg spinner. So take that as position. So take that as permission, Ryan, to really experiment, try and get that googly going. And if you can't get it going, then maybe you can come up with something else which is even more unique and different, and will start you ripping through opposition before you know it. Let us know how you get on if you pick up that googly. Now, as you know, we have a soapbox here at the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's getting a little bit old and broken, but we've managed to patch it up enough for Lavers to risk life and limb and jump up on it for just one more week. 60 seconds of a rant. Lavers, over to you this week.
Okay, well, what I just want to have a quick conversation about is really what we do at the end of the season, how we wrap up the season. And I think for a lot of people, the initial response is, let's just finish it there. The last game's played. Let's all meet up in 3 months' time, talk about how it went, but let's just try and get away from it. And all I want to suggest is that just spend a few more hours or a week or so just thinking about how things have gone, and try and make your review process as clear as possible. So as a team or as a club or as an individual, you can analyse how you've done. You can analyse how people around you have done, and you can identify where you need to improve. And I think if you leave that for another 6 weeks or another couple of months, sometimes you may forget little bits of information, little snippets that are going to be really valuable along the line. So try and get that analysis in done as soon as you can after the season, as an individual and as a group, and hopefully you can then plan for the future, plan for the next season a little bit more effectively.
Okay, that is all we've got time for this week. Before we leave, though, we are going to risk a little bit longer with Gareth on the line to find out one more thing, and that is, of course, the winner of this week's competition. We had two questions. We had Sarvesh's question about his batting setup, and we had Ryan's question about the googly. What we really want to know, Gareth, is which one was the best one that wins the prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy this week?
Well, this week it's going to be Ryan, because fantastic question about leg spin. We all love leg spin on this show, and we haven't had one for a while. So, Ryan, there are some courses that you can go for. Mohamed Haroon's course will be very useful for you to have a look at, but there are others on the site that I'm sure you'll find useful. Congratulations.
Haroon, of course, is a great friend of the show, so I do thoroughly suggest that you pick up a copy there. Now, of course, there'll be people listening to the show who think, you know what, I want my question answered, and I want to win a prize as well. Gareth, what would they need to do to send their question in to us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203-239-7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Seamless as ever, even while driving. There is also other ways of getting in touch with us through social media. Our Twitter is at PitchVisionAcant. You can tweet us there. And our Facebook is facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. You can subscribe to the show, of course, if you want to listen every week. It comes out every Friday. And if you want to do that, just go to your favorite podcasting app. iTunes is the one that most people use, but if you've got an iPhone or an iPad or anything like that, you can use the podcast app there, or you can use Downcast, you can use Overcast, you can use Dogcatcher, you can use just about anything you like. Just head into there, do a search, and you'll find us in there. You can subscribe and get it downloaded every single week. And if you want to use the good old RSS feed, you can do that as well. Just go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link at the top in the green bar there, and you'll find all the details for subscribing to the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, boys.